Welcome to Barn Banter by Horse Illustrated, a podcast with something for all horse lovers. I'm Raquel Lynn from Los Angeles. You might know me from my blogs, Horses and Heels, or Stable Style.
And I'm Susan Friedland from Saddle Seeks Horse. Raquel and I grew up reading Horse Illustrated magazine and riding as much as possible.
Today, we both write for the magazine and are friends in real life.
Join us each month as we do one of our favorite things, talk about horses and the horse lifestyle.
Hey, Susan, we're back for episode 2. How exciting. It's a really busy time of year for so many of us. What have you been working on lately?
Well, I got to tell you, Raquel, I've really been juggling articles and my upcoming new book. I can tell you that next year I've got an article that will be in Horse Illustrated based on my trip to Ireland. And Western Life Today, I'm working on a feature regarding going to the Central Coast area of California. And the manuscript that I'm most excited about, I'm in the home stretch. It's going to be another memoir, and I'll tell you more about that in the future.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that. I know you've also been selling your books for the holidays. Tell us a little bit more about them for those listeners who are unfamiliar, and where can they find them?
Sure. So my first book is called Horses Adored and Men Endured, and it is my somewhat cringy tale, true tale. It's a horse lover's dating memoir. And a few years ago, there was an excerpt of it in Horse Illustrated, actually. And then my follow-up book was a little more of a kind of sad thing. I wrote it through a lot of tears, and it was based on a blog post. It's called Strands of Hope, How to Grieve the Loss of a Horse. And it was written based on my experience of losing my heart horse that I had had for 16 years. And then my final title is called Unbridled Creativity, and it is it's for the writing writer. I know those words, writing and writing, sound alike. And it's a list of writing prompts. So if you like to write and love horses, it's a great gift book. It's a great creative journal type of publication. And those can be found at my website, saddleseekshorse.com.
That's awesome.
And Raquel, you're also an author. Besides your beautiful candles, you have a coffee table book of dream barns. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I do. So Stable Style Barn Inspiration for All Equestrians is a lovely book loaded with beautiful barn photos. And light reading. So it's a nice book to just flip through, you know, on a cozy, rainy or snowy day. That's what I kind of love about this time of year. You know, we get to catch up on books or more indoor projects. Of course, we miss the riding, but I do love flipping through a good book with a, you know, a cup of tea.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of, I don't even know how many books right now, horse books, self-help books, all kinds of books. It's definitely the season.
That's awesome.
Well, let's get on to the show.
Absolutely. We have so much to talk about today. First, we are going to be chatting with author and polo player Courtney Maum. Her horse memoir, The Year of the Horse, was chosen by the Today Show as the best read for mental health awareness. Then Rebecca of Rebecca Ray Designs talks about her lifestyle brand and gives us some decorating tips for the holidays, followed by our ASPCA Right Horse of the Month, which you can adopt.
Our first guest is Courtney Maum. Courtney is the author of 5 books, including the memoir, The Year of the Horses, which, by the way, is in Horse Illustrated's November-December issue in the Winter Reading List article. And she's also the author of the groundbreaking publishing guide that Vanity Fair named as one of the 10 best books for writers, before and after the book deal. Courtney is also a writing coach, executive director of the nonprofit learning collaborative, The Cabins, and educator. When she's not helping writers to write better, she's working on deepening her bond with her rescue racehorse, Abuelita, Welcome, Courtney. I'm really thrilled to have a chance to speak with you today and have you on Barn Banter.
I'm so excited. I'm so happy to be here. I feel like I just ate a bunch of grain and I've got the zoomies. I'm so happy.
Cool. Okay. Because I got a lot of questions for you here. Well, first off, as you know, I read your book and I loved it and I reviewed it on my blog, Saddle Seeks Horse. The book again is The Year of the Horses. And you wrote about a very special Christmas gift from your childhood. And I admit I was a little bit jealous when I got to that part of the story. So could you just tell it, you know, the holidays are upon us. Tell us about that gift.
My like perfect childhood. I had a very lovely childhood. And when I turned 5, by that point, I already had the horse bug. I wanted a pony. I think I had seen a pony at a child's birthday party or something. And that was it. There was just nothing else. I wouldn't shut up about it. So my parents, being clever and rational, got me a rocking horse for my 5th birthday, but not just any rocking horse, like a life-size rocking horse made out of mahogany that was actually so heavy. I couldn't rock it alone with my 5-year-old body. My mom had to come behind and sort of thrust it forward. And, you know, I certainly spent a lot of time on that rocking horse. It had real reins, leather rein, like it was quite something, right? Probably cost more than a pony, honestly. And that didn't scratch the itch, alas, especially because I could not move it myself. And so I didn't stop. It was like my own daughter right now with Taylor Swift concert tickets, which, again, cost less than I could find a horse for less than Taylor Swift concert tickets. And so for the sixth Christmas, you know, I came downstairs and there wasn't like much under the tree, but my dad, I think the car was idling outside, and I just got that feeling, you know, and we had a quick breakfast and drove to a barn, not a barn I knew because I wasn't riding. And there was, you know, every little girl, horse girl's dream, this little fuzzy pony on crossed eyes, unhappy to be on crossed eyes with a big red bow. And oh my gosh, yeah, it just absolutely amazing. I can't imagine how long, I mean, my parents stay at that barn, but like definitely one of the happiest moments of my life. And yeah, up there with the really, really good Christmas presents. So yeah.
So was the next Christmas kind of a downer?
No, because of course I was just, nothing matters after that. You know, if you have the right match with the horse, I mean, like, every Christmas since I've started riding again as an adult, my list is all for someone, for a horse. Not to be gifted with a horse, but it's like, oh, I want new hoof boots, or I love a new saddle blanket, or ooh, I'd really like to try this supplement and it's a little expensive. I hope that Santa brings it for me. There's nothing on my list for me. You know, my daughter was reviewing it the other day. She's 9, and she was reviewing, we both wrote notes to Santa. She still believes in Santa. So we both wrote our letters to Santa, and she said, Mommy, everything on here is for the horse. You know, what do you want? And I just, that's the place that brings me joy. You know, I could ask for some new pens because writing brings me joy, but I can get myself pens.
Stuff for the horse.
Yeah,
it really brings me, I just, honestly, the stuff for the horse is so utilized.
Yeah.
Whether it's treats or I have no idea, you know, a new, I'm thinking of small things, not like a new saddle, but, you know, new polo wraps or whatever. I'm having tactile interaction with these things every single day in a way that a new dress, you know, maybe not, or I have no idea.
Okay. Well, I really hope that your family listens to this episode. Yes. So feel free to just spout off as we're going through these other questions, what it is you want, because maybe we'll you know, drop some hints there. All right. So back to this dream pony, your 6th Christmas. I would love to know like color, name, breed, how long. And then also there was a gap in your life and then you have another larger pony in your life now. So maybe you could start with the first and then your current.
So let's see. I have pretty much only can go on my 6th my 6-year-old memory of this pony, because my parents seem to have forgotten everything. I interviewed them for my memoir. I had thought that we owned the horse. My mom said it was a lease. My dad said he bought it. You know, I know there seems to be, we don't, the moms are not really a family of communicators. So this horse was like muddy colored with a sandy, one of those lion manes, you know, it just like constantly was sticking out and looking slightly electrocuted, and had that delicious pony attitude of always being grumpy, but willing, you know, but like always kind of sassy about it. And I named the pony Fantasy. And we were, you know, partnership for maybe 2 years when I got quite tall. I had a big growth spurt and was starting to jump higher. We were jumping and stuff. And so I do think that it was a lease, you know, and my dad was like, it's the same amount of money, a horse, you know. So I think to him, he owned it. But it, you know, it went, I changed barns and everything. So Fantasy passed into the hands of another really lucky girl. And after that was Woody and a flea bitten gray. And then I stopped riding. My parents got divorced, financial situation changed, but mostly my brother, as I write about in the book, my younger brother was starting to have some very, very serious developmental issues and health issues, and was hospitalized just constantly. And there wasn't time, you know, for my sort of indulgent riding anymore. So yeah, I didn't start again I never thought I would return to horses. Actually, I really, to me, they were a trapping of a very privileged past, which I felt was behind me. By a pretty early age, I recognized that I wanted to be a writer. I was clever enough to look around in, you know, 1980s Greenwich, Connecticut, and realize that a lot of material comfort did not come from being an artist, you know, so maybe that was not going to, this is that my youth was not what my own adulthood would look like, is something that I was pretty convinced of at an early age. And even though my parents were paying for the horse stuff when I was little, you know, you don't have to be a genius to look around and see it's all Land Rovers, or where I was in Greenwich and Bedford, New York at the time, you know, it takes money, right? Or it can look like it takes tons and tons of money. I've found a different angle in now as a, you know, a professional artist. But yeah, I really never thought that I would have the privilege or ability or financial independence, to be honest, to be able to go back to horses. As a creative person, I really try to live beneath my means. That seems like the most sustainable thing. So it seemed like no place for horses. But as I write about in the book, when I was around 38, I just had a complete unraveling, and I couldn't find my way back to joy anywhere in my life. And that's how I returned to horses. And my first horse that I've ever owned in my life, Abuelita, is a horse who's not in the memoir. She came into my life after I had finished that book. The book sees me learning how to play polo, which is, I call it my anti-sports memoir, because I've never thought of myself as an athlete, but competitive sports brought me back into my body, which for a depressed person, I think is a struggle, right? There's a disembodiment element. And I got really into polo, mostly arena polo. And long story short, I met this mare, a senior mare. That's why she's named Abuelita, which is Spanish for like little grandma. And she was being abused, neglected, not fed. Basically, this dude was, I think, hoping she would colic in the field. And I decided to go to bat for her, even though, you know, my abilities are more quarter horse, gelding, steady, easy. And instead, I went to bat for an abused 26-year-old chestnut mare, thoroughbred.
I feel like this needs to be a novella or some kind of short story. I don't know if you do have plans or if you can share with us if you're going to have any kind of storyline with her.
I wrote an article for The Guardian about her. The Guardian, it's a newspaper. It's in print and online, so I guess newspaper. And that was a very proud moment for me. They sent out a photographer and stuff. I'm so in it with her right now. I really do want to write about it at some point, but I'm so in it with her right now that, because she's regressing, we've made a great, great deal of progress. She'd become, you know, we were going on trails alone. And right now, maybe it's winter. I often tell people, I think she does not understand why she's not wintering in Florida.
Which she's bitter because of the bitter weather.
Yeah. She was worked hard when she was in Florida, but still, I think she's like, ugh, you say you rescue me, and yet I have to spend the winter in Northwestern Connecticut. Are you kidding me? So right now I'm too in it. It's much like my depression. People ask me sometimes, did you write the book while you were going through it? And the answer is absolutely not. I was in a really bad place. I didn't write that book till maybe 5 years after getting better. And with her, I take copious notes. I talk about her all the time. I think I would like to novelize it, fictionalize it at some point, because I'm also, you know, I try not to have too much sympathy for people who abuse animals, but the person whose quote unquote care she was in before, I'm also trying to wonder what, or trying to sort out in my head what makes people hurt animals, you know?
Yeah.
Hurt people, but hurt people hurt animals. Right. If you look at, I mean, not to go too dark, but a lot of serial killers start off as children by hurting animals. And so there is something that I think is expansive enough to try to look not just into my own character. Why in the world would I, a fearful person, adopt this kind of horse, but also this former owner? What happened in his past, true or not, you know, invented, that led him to hurt animals that carried him around on a polo field?
Yeah, you know? That sounds very interesting. I have another question that I wanted to ask you. So your writing is just beautiful, and there are scenes, I mean, I read it this past summer, but I could picture like it was a movie going on in my head. And so one of those scenes, and I would love for you to share with people who haven't yet read your book, there was this pivotal YouTube search, which brought a stunning dressage performance your way. And I feel like that sort of set you on this trajectory back to horses. So could you maybe just give us a quick synopsis of that? Because I love that scene.
Oh my gosh. Let's see. Right. So in my memoir, The Year of the Horses, I was just feeling so lost. My daughter had turned two. My writing, I had a book that was under contract and due imminently, and the book was just not working. And, you know, as a type A Virgo, everything, I've sort of always wrangled things into working, and nothing was working. My relationship with my husband was coming apart at the seams. My health was really bad. I have chronic insomnia. I wasn't sleeping. And I remember going up to my office, which was on the second floor. We've moved out of this house since, and I just typed in, like, show me something beautiful. I literally typed into Google, show me the most beautiful thing in the world. And oddly enough, I wasn't researching horses at that time. They weren't on my mind. So I don't really know algorithm wise why this video would have come up, but it was maybe not the not one of the final performances, I think, of the, am I speaking out of turn, Dutch dressage rider, Andreas Helsgrand. I think Dutch, I hope. And his horse, Blue Horse Matinee. And it wasn't one of the, you know, Grand Prix style, huge, beautiful arenas. It was like kind of a crappy, weird arena in some rural part of Germany, people seemed kind of drunk. It was really dark. And he came out to Simply the Best by Tina Turner. And all the lights were off and there was just a spotlight on this gorgeous white horse. And I'd never seen dressage. You know, I'd been at a jumping barn. I had never seen dressage. Those 30 years I didn't spend where I didn't ride. I didn't spend pining for horses. I really didn't. I thought I'd move past it. I had never seen a dressage performance. And I looked at that video and I just started like weeping, absolutely weeping, because the bond between him and his animal and the joy that the horse was showing in the performance, I thought, first of all, that's connection and that's joy. And I have neither of them in my life right now. I don't have that joy and connection with my husband. I had it with my daughter. We don't have it right now. And I don't have it with my writing. And if I don't get it back somewhere with something, I'm going to come apart. My whole life is going to come apart at the seams. And you know, ironically enough, it's not like I ran to schedule a horseback riding lesson. I don't think I did for 2 more years. It took a while, but that stuck with me. And I did start to write about horses. I brought a fictional dressage rider into first a short story. And then I tried to develop the short story into a novel. And so I was writing about horse people, but totally avoiding barns. And ultimately, the most important seed was probably going to a barn to interview a dressage rider. I had picked a dressage champion as my main character, but I knew no dressage riders. And I'd only seen a video, not in person. So I went to go interview her and it was the smell of the barn. I had not been back in a barn for 30 years. And we're doing this with video and I could see both of you nodding, you know, because that's just like, that's it.
We know the smell.
It's familiar. And I think yes. I'd been avoiding that smell, just knowing that it would just absolutely bring me back. And again, it wasn't right away, but my soul certainly, you know, raised its hand and was like, hello, we would like to do this again, please.
This is amazing. So the other thing I want to know, because I'm also a memoir writer, is you share such intensely personal information about your mental health and about your relationships. And so do you ever have these moments where you think, oh my gosh, I can't believe I put so much of my life out into the world and like wish that you could take it back? Or how is it that you're able to share so vulnerably? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
And then maybe elaborate a little bit more on the role that riding has played in helping you with depression and just some of the other relationships.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that question. That's an important question, you know, for anyone writing memoir. There's lots of ways, different ways to go about writing memoir. But to me, the most important thing to avoid doing is settling a score, writing for revenge, writing from a place of anger. And a lot of my original drafts were coming out like that. I felt that I had been right about a number of things and my husband had been wrong, and or I was angry at my parents, or, you know, whatever the heck it was. And really, it was through revision that I, and maturity and time and patience, that I realized that, sure, certain things had happened in my past, but, you know, that I was mostly responsible for the way that I was feeling or not feeling. I was responsible for the way I was viewing or not viewing the world. If I had pessimism issues, you know, those were kind of my issues. So I don't know, I've always, I've written a lot of personal essays. I've always truly enjoyed writing personal essays. And I find that if I'm not taking a risk, if I'm not doing something that's making me feel uncomfortable and scared, but courageous at the same time, then probably what I'm writing isn't worth it. You know, even when I write funny, I mean, this book has a lot of humor in it, but even when I'm writing kind of one-off pieces for online magazines that are deeply funny, I'm still trying to show myself as vulnerable. So for example, in my guidebook, the Before and After the Book Deal, that's a book that came out of my experience of being a debut novelist with a totally unexpected bestseller, right? And then being toured for that book all across the country. I had chauffeurs, you know, it was like wild. And then I'd show up to these events and there'd be one person there, you know, and one was a bookseller. And then I'm not saying this in a glib manner, there'd be like a homeless man. There's often homeless people at readings because it's a nice, free, warm place to go. And I was like, nope, what is happening? I don't understand. You know, they're footing the bill for the plane and the hotel and the driver, and there's two people at every reading. And I called my agent, like, they're going to fire me. I'm some terrible disaster. And she said, oh, no, no, no. This, it's like this for everyone. And I said, why isn't anyone telling? So, you know, that whole book was about me kind of bringing in the sisters and brothers and saying, okay, no one else is going to tell you this, but all this weird stuff happened to me. And then I went and interviewed hundreds of people, but, you know, I was like, I'm pretty passionate about embarrassing myself so that other people can learn and hopefully avoid from mistakes. So, you know, that to me, writing in that manner feels necessary and brave. It's probably harder for my family members to read than it is for me to write, I think. And then your second question, the writers and the mental health, it's just a constant mirror checkpoint for how I'm doing with my energy levels. You know, in my darkest hours, like, my cortisol is sky high, like so high, I've broken it out into shingles, just have a lot of anxiety. And you can't have that anxiety running that high around horses, and certainly not my crazy chestnut mare. So, you know, I find it deeply satisfying. Now, I went from when I started riding, walk down the barn aisle and the horses would just pin their ears, or they'd weave or bob. They just, like, I was carrying such terrible energy. And then when I rode, my shoulders were so high and my legs were so clenched and I wouldn't breathe. And so I'd often be the person that got bolted away with, like, pretty often was bolted away with. And I wanted the animals to nicker when they saw me. I wanted to not be bolted away with. And so little by little, I had to adjust the way I held my body. I had to adjust the way that I breathe. Well, I had to breathe. I had to learn how to breathe.
That's sometimes the hardest part in writing.
I find it incredibly difficult. In fact, I often sing now. I sing so that I don't block my breath. But, you know, I just have a better... It's easier for me to be in front of a horse who pins their ears and says, I don't love what you're bringing into my world today. That's feedback I can handle more easily than in front of my husband, if we have a little bit of a kerfuffle, or if my daughter's a little sassy with me. Those things are more loaded, you know, like, you don't know exactly. There's so much baggage in personal relationships. And also, human beings are not always honest. Whereas horses are just boom, ears back, ears forward. You know, there's not that many directions for it.
Yeah.
Right. They swish their tails. They paw. There's limited amount of ways for them to communicate what energy you have, and they're all pretty clear. Their body language is awfully clear, whereas humans are confusing.
Yeah, that's true. I love what you said though about the singing, because my new farrier actually hums when he trims my mare, and she just kind of like melts with him. And I've always thought that she was always a little difficult with the farrier before, and I was like, well, she's fine for me. She's not okay with this farrier. And then I got this new farrier and he just picks up her feet and hums, and she just is like, oh, hey, I love you. So,
but probably the vibrations from humming, you know, are deeply pleasing. And yeah, sound healing is no joke.
All right. Well, we're in the home stretch of this interview here. And Courtney, I know that you work with other writers, and if you want to give us a little synopsis on your coaching, the cabins, and then also where people can find you so that they can connect with you more and learn about how you work with writers.
Sure.
And I'm saying you. Writers as in like writing stories. I don't say my T's very.
No, it's hard. It's hard.
Not writing.
It is hard. Yeah. Writing and writing. I'll have to pronounce my W. So, basically, with the kind of coaching work I do, I just cut straight to the chase. I don't do full manuscript consultation. So I'm not sitting down and reading your 70,000 page, you know, and then helping you bring it up to a certain level. What I do is I isolate, I'm kind of like the chiropractor, right, for horses. I'll isolate the problem area. Usually I do this in a, well, often I could do it by just looking at someone's query letter. A query letter is a summary of your book or a pitch that you're trying to send to an agent or an editor to get them interested in your work. And generally from the query letter, I can suss out, oh, there aren't enough stakes, or the middle's going to drag, or this memoir is all memories and the person has forgotten to turn it into a memoir. There doesn't seem to be value added for someone that isn't this person. You know, it's almost like a cathartic diary. And then instead of trying to do a line by line edit on this massive sprawling thing, I really just talk to people, try to bring them back to the original reason that they wrote this, try to see where things went awry, and give them actionable solutions that they can use, but also teach themselves. You know, I don't actually look to have ongoing clients. You know, I have just a few, but generally I want to get in and I want to get out. I want to train people to be their own best editor, and also just give truly candid but supportive feedback. So, you know, I'll work with someone who they've been sending out their memoir. It's gotten 40 rejections without any kind of personalized feedback. And they have absolutely no idea what's working. And often people come to me when they've paid thousands and thousands of dollars to a developmental editor who has sort of blown smoke up their ASS. and I just, that's not interesting to me. So I will tell people in as supportive of a manner as possible, what's wrong, you know? And sometimes it's just that their writing's not there, you know? And I tell people, you have to go to conferences, or you don't read. A lot of times people don't read, you know, they're writers. So I do that. And I help people with their query letters, because it's very hard. It's very, very hard to write a summary of your work. Oh, and then the cabins is my nonprofit arts retreat. But it's special in that it's not like regular artist retreat where people go to work on their own projects. You go to collaborate and learn from other people. So we usually take around 9 people. It's totally interdisciplinary. So that means absolutely not just writers. We have actors and dancers. We've had a clown. We have architects, graphic designers, filmmakers, musicians. And everyone who comes has to teach a master class in the passion of their choice. And it doesn't have to be what they align with professionally. So we've had a writer who came and, you know, she was like, I'm just so burnt out on teaching writing. Could I teach pasta making and kind of bring in world building into the pasta making? I said, absolutely. And the idea is everyone has to go to every class. And you need to participate and just open yourself to learning new things, because I really do feel that we have become, even in creative industries, you know, we're in silos all the time. We talk with the people who are in our specific line of work. We watch what we want. Everything's on demand. Your phones bring you the information that you want to see. Twitter brings you the, you know, TikTok. They bring you the videos you want to see. And so we're not always engaging with personally challenging information. And I think it's very important to stay challenged emotionally and creatively. So, that's the idea. It's a learning collaborative. And it's short and it's low cost and it's always in a beautiful place.
Very cool. So if people want to learn more about the cabins and see the many books, you've written several of them, and learn about you, where would you want to send them online?
So your best one-stop destination would be CourtneyMaum.com. MAUM is my last name, CourtneyMaum.com. And through that, I have a newsletter you can subscribe to where I send out very insidery publishing and publishing advice, publishing insight, and craft tips every week. And through my website, you can get to the cabins, but the cabins is the cabins retreat www.horsesadored.com. Right now, we just closed for applications. We don't have a current open application cycle, but in the fall, we are launching the Cabins West, which will be out in Joshua Tree. And those applications should open this spring. So if
you Raquel was just in Joshua Tree.
Oh, good.
I love Joshua Tree.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. So if you find me on social media, especially Instagram, and sign up for my newsletter, that's always how I keep everyone abreast of what's happening in my book world and then the art retreat world too.
Wonderful. Thank you, Courtney, for coming on. It was really fun to talk to you, and a lot to digest there. Thank you for being vulnerable.
And, thank you. Well, thank you so much for having me. And thank you again for reading The Year of the Horses. I hope if people are listening and they decide to pick it up that you enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, just keep that to yourself. If you enjoyed it, tell everyone. Yeah.
Excellent. But, well, I did enjoy it. So that's coming from me, Susan. Go get The Year of the Horses. And I especially, the other scene that I thought when you mentioned that you do kind of write some funny things was the model horses prior to one of your first polo matches.
Oh, the chalk talk, my old polo coach would give us chalk talks where she pulled out all these briar horses and she'd be like, okay, Courtney, you're on horse number one. And it would be a draft horse. Like it'd be this Clydesdale briar horse. And then there'd be the itsy bitsy pony. And she'd be like, Matt, you're number two and you have to get an offside, and it was just, I thought that was a riot. I just love that so much.
I think you had a line in there too, something about you wanted to just ride the briar because you were feeling a little bit intimidated.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to be on the briar. It would have been, in the beginning, that would have been better for everyone. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, hilarious. Well, thanks again, Courtney. It's great to see you and we wish you much success with your writing endeavors.
Thank you. And I wish the same for both of you. Thank you again for having me.
Happy holidays.
Yay. Happy holidays.
Bye.
Bye.
With unrivaled performance and breakthrough equine technology, Exhibitor's color enhancing system is pH balanced, contains no harsh chemicals, bleaches or dyes, and intensifies your horse's natural coat color, coat contrast, and shine. Champion dressage trainer and international Grand Prix rider Kim Gentry says, "The quick shampoo and quick conditioner are amazing. The formula is very low sudsing, and with very little effort, it pulled the dirt and grime off my horse's coats without having to do a lot of scrubbing. The thing I'm really impressed with is how soft it leaves the horse's mane and tail." For professional show ring results, Exhibitor's formulas clean and maintain the magnificence of your show horse.
Our next guest is Rebecca Uhas-Smith, the CEO and designer of Rebecca Ray Designs. Her Benchmade bags are produced by American multi-generational artisans all by hand. Rebecca's a mom, wife, and farm owner living in Ohio. She embraces the sporting lifestyle while raising champion Percherons, English setters, and border terriers. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
We're so glad you're here. We have so much to talk about today. And for those listeners who are tuning in and aren't familiar with you and your brand, give us the rundown on Rebecca Ray Designs.
Well, sure. Rebecca Ray Designs is really a lifestyle brand. It's all things equestrian. And we really started in the handbag space, but we've moved to accessories, home goods, tabletop, stationery, and everything that encompasses the sporting art and the sporting lifestyle. So it's very horsey and very canine too.
Yeah, that's amazing. For those of you who don't know, I used to live in Ohio. So Rebecca and I met many years ago. And I've been a fan of just your handbags and everything. It's really gorgeous and has, beautiful equestrian details. So that's how you started, correct? With the handbags?
Right. I really started making everything myself years ago. And it was while my husband and I were living in California in San Francisco. And it just was one of those things that really happened. My degrees, my undergraduate and graduate degrees, are really in education and political science. So this was a little bit off the track. And I just started making these bags because I have such a love of antiques and all things vintage. And one thing led to another. And really, all the dog show judges were carrying them, and the, you know, my horse friends were carrying them, and one thing led to another. And we won a national entrepreneurial woman search opportunity offered by Country Living Magazine first. And then we were chosen, we've been chosen twice to be on the Oprah Magazine Best Made in America. So some wonderful things happened to us along the way.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, it's been cool to see you guys grow. And, you know, I always love to see what is new. And, you know, speaking of that, what are some fun holiday offerings you have right now in the shop?
Well, we actually have had a wonderful holiday season, and we have offered some really specific things for holiday, which is kind of new for us. We have a velvet pouch that we've done with two fell ponies on it. For holiday as an evening clutch. And that has been a huge hit. We've done several other wonderful pouches and clutches that are just for holiday. We also have ornaments that we did this year with our images that are all made here by hand, and they're cut out on a fabulous laser machine. And then we apply all of our art on both sides and apply snow and sparkle. The elves go at it. And those have been tremendous. We our green zucchini Blair bag, I think in the green and the red for holiday, has been a terrific piece. And our stationery, our tea towels, and all those small giving opportunities as gifts and barn gifts and things like that have really done very well this year. We have candles with wonderful equestrian scents and things like that. So it's been a fun season for us.
Yeah, that's great. That zucchini bag is really cute.
I know. It's calling my name.
Yeah. And anything green, I think, with equestrian is just really classy.
I do too. Green has been trending very, very heavily. And this is a particularly good green. We always do well with it, but we did not see this coming with this bag. It outsells the other colors at least 2-1.
So that's Rebecca, fantastic. If I could insert here for a minute, I follow you on social media and I've long really enjoyed your designs, but for listeners who are new, and I know you're talking about the zucchini bag, of course, all I can think of is zucchini in my garden. So could you elaborate a little bit so for people could get a picture in their mind of what type of bag this is, if it's more of a large tote or a smaller clutch, or maybe you already said, and I was thinking about your percherons that you're going to talk about in a minute.
No, it's fine. It's a saddlebag. It's a crossbody saddlebag, and we make it in two sizes. It has a bit on the front, and it's a very simple design, but it's very classic. And again, it's all bench made and stitched by our harness makers. And it has a contrasting top stitch, and it comes with a wonderful strap that also has a woven part in it. And we're making it in the zucchini green, which is just a really great deep green. We're making it in red in our regular chestnut, black. And we also for holiday did a black bag with black patent leather accents on it. So that one has been terrific too. So you have to go to our website and you can see it, but there are great pictures of all of them.
Thank you.
That's fantastic. Now, speaking of holidays, I know that you do an amazing job decorating your house for Christmas. So I have to ask, how many trees do you have this year?
At the moment, I have no trees up. Okay. This elf has been so busy packing product with our team that we are packing into the wee hours of the night to get everything to its owners. But I do normally, we have 3 or 4 major trees, and then I have a lot of feather trees. And I think last year I counted and we were up at around 10. I love collecting for the holiday, and almost everything we have in the house is vintage or antique, and including all of our ornaments, except for our family tree. And I love using fresh florals. So I do tend to wait until everybody goes to bed at night. And then I decorate for a couple hours every night until I get done. And we like to entertain, so that's fun. We're featuring those designs this year on my blog. So actually yesterday we released some sneaky pictures of the house and the animals helping decorate. And we'll take pictures of the barn and, you know, just the fun that we have during the holidays here in snowy Ohio.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
What part of Ohio are you in, Rebecca?
We live in northeastern Cleveland in the suburbs. We're in a sleepy village called Chagrin Falls, which is very much a tourist destination. And it looks like a New England village. And we're along the river line where it's very much horse country. We have a hunt here. We have very active horse people. And it's a really fun place to live. And we really enjoy it.
Sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it is. I've had like many like first dates in Chagrin Falls. It's definitely like the perfect place to take a new boyfriend, or, you know, I took my husband there. We had like a date there. So it worked. It got me married.
It got you married. Well, it's funny. My husband often entertains his business clients here if they're in town. And one of them one day said to us, "You didn't tell me that you lived in Bedford Falls," which is, you know, from It's a Wonderful Life. It very much has that vibe about it. It's a very retro kind of vibe, and it's a fun place to live.
Yeah, it is. Now, jumping back into the horses, and I know Susan wants to talk about this a little bit, but tell us who you have in your barn right now and a little bit about what you do with those horses.
Well, we raise driving Percherons, mostly for driving and in-hand confirmation. And our mares, you know, we're producing babies with our mares. And right now we actually are down in our numbers. We have two Percherons at home. We have a mare whose name is Whirligig, who's Lily. And I think you've met Lily before.
Yes,
and we have a young stallion who's very promising and very exciting. His name is Drift. And he's actually off for a little training. And then we have a warm blood in the barn whose name is Stella the Warm Blood. And we have a few extra ponies that are here just laying up for some friends. So that's what we have in our barn right now. But we're very active with the Percherons, and we've had as many as five or six at one time, which is a lot of big feet.
It is. Yeah. And your barn is beautiful too. It's actually been, her tack room has been featured on Stable Style before. And, you know, just your home, and I think your barn and everything, it kind of represents, you know, the lifestyle that you live with that sporting horse, you know, it's good. And you just have a great, you know, eye for design.
Well, thank you. You know, we, the company is really about what we know and what we love. And we're very authentic because of that. You know, everything on our handbags is all horse equestrian grade hardware. It's all premium bridle leather. We're using pieces that we know what they do when we use them on horses. So it's, you know, it's an authentic process to get to the product that we get to, and we're very familiar with it. And I think that's what lends itself so nicely with the public, is because they understand that, you know, I'm cleaning stalls at 6 o'clock at night, and I'm, you know, running kids back and forth to school and all of that, you know, no different than anyone else really. And it's all a juggling act, truthfully.
Yeah, you definitely have a lot on your plate. And going back to Christmas, are you hosting this year, or?
We actually we're only having a small event here this year. Normally we do a couple of big ones, but with work being so busy this year, I was afraid to really get myself too overcommitted.
Yeah.
So we wanted to have enough time to do some sleigh riding and things like that. And so we're having a quiet Christmas at home this year with family, which will be very nice.
That sounds really nice. Well, tell us a little bit about the sleigh riding and stuff. So you hook the Percherons up when you get the snow and take them out?
We do. It's hard. You know, sleigh riding is all glamorized and, you know, everybody thinks you can just hitch the sleigh up. The conditions have to be really right to sleigh ride. So more often than not in the winter, we're doing wagon rides with hot chocolate, and there may be an adult hot chocolate beverage involved to the people in the back of the wagon. And usually my husband and our daughter drive, and then we take a group of people in blankets and go out in the snow. We've done parties here at night where we do sleigh rides under the stars and the moon. And we do torches lighting them, which is really, really fun. Usually we hitch a team, and we have what we would call a bobsled, which can take enough people. We have a formal sleigh too, but really with a team, the bobsled is a better bet. And we just love doing it. We really fell into driving horses with a pony that we bought for my daughter when she was two. Mm-hmm. And we had such fun driving that pony that my husband and I decided that, you know, we wanted to do bigger driving horses. So mm-hmm. that's when we went to draft horses, who really are everything that they're characterized as. They are gentle giants. We love living with them. They would sleep on the ends of our beds if we would allow them, especially Lily. Yeah. So they're a little big for that, but it's been great fun.
Yeah, Rebecca, a question I have for you, because I'm thinking now, of course, of the songs we sing around the holidays, and I'm dying to know, what is the difference between a bobsled and a sleigh? I just assumed that it was, you know, interchangeable.
Well, a sleigh, you know, I don't really know the technical answer to that, and I'm sure there's really a good one. A bobsled is really like a big wagon box with two axles, and a team would haul it. And a sleigh has two sets of runner, you know, two runners, and a fender board. And typically with a sleigh, you're only going to use one or two horses. The problem we have learned with a sleigh and draft horses is if your fender isn't really high, you spend a lot of time with snow in your face. I mean, if you're really moving. Well, and on a bobsled, you're much higher and it's far more utilitarian.
That makes sense. And now do you have trails, or where do you take when you go out with the sleigh or, you know, the wagon? Where do you guys go?
Well, our neighbors know we're nuts. And so we have a wonderful cul-de-sac across the street, and we can drive quite handily through the cul-de-sac. In fact, sometimes we'll have three wagons and three sets of horses or three horses driving when we're getting ready for shows to keep them, you know, fit. And they're wearing borium tips on their feet so that they don't slide on the asphalt. Our neighbors love it. I think one day somebody offered to pay my husband to come to a birthday party. And I'm not sure where he thought my husband was from, but my husband is like, I'm your neighbor, I will come do it for free. So and then we also have about probably 10 acres of trails here on the property that we can use, and we just use it for work and conditioning.
That's awesome. That's such
I think you need to go home to Ohio and I'll meet you there. I'm in Illinois presently, and we'll go and we'll pray for snow and Rebecca can take us out. And it just sounds like so much fun. I feel like
it's an amazing thing. And when you show driving horses, when everything goes right in a driving class, it is like, you know, I've handled a lot of great dogs. I've ridden a lot of great horses, but there is something about driving, you know, a horse and getting an amazing drive out of them in the show ring that is euphoric, to tell you the truth. It's a real high. So it's tons of fun.
Yeah, it looks, I mean, magical. And
it is magical. Although, as my husband always says, you know, there's a great difference about when things go bad. When you're riding, when things go bad, the worst that's going to happen is you are going to part company with your horse and you're going to fall off and you'll be separated as you were intended. When you're driving and something goes bad, it's a more complicated thing. And, you know, through the years, we've learned to deal with those things. Very rarely does anything go wrong, but, you know, you'd be surprised. And you have to always respect the amount of power in any horse, but especially these horses. And, you know, they have big bodies and they're just by nature, they're big horses. And so you have to be really careful with that too.
Yeah, absolutely. They're horses. So anything that can go wrong.
Exactly.
Might.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I kind of think I already know the answer, but do you have a favorite Christmas memory with your horses? I feel like, I mean, taking them out in the sleigh has got to be the highlight.
That is high up there. In the driving pony, we used to have such fun with Lizzie when she was, you know, little and sat between us and we would drive those horses in the snow. But I do have a reoccurring favorite thing that I do for Christmas, which I was thinking about before the interview. My mother comes from her family behind her is German. And there's a German fable that says that at midnight on Christmas Eve, the animals speak to one another. And so for years, my mother has been, you know, she used to tease us and her family used to tease us that she would go out into the barn at midnight and hide and try and hear the animals speak. And there is something incredibly you know, soulful about being in the barn on Christmas Eve at midnight, listening for the animals to speak. It's just, for me, it's, you know, my private quiet time with them. And I think that that's really magical. So I listen every year for them to speak too. I'm waiting. Lily, you know, she's not so good with her enunciation, but she's working on it. So that's my favorite time of the holiday.
I mean, that sounds like a perfect way to, you know, spend the holidays with the horses in the barn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. Thank you so much for being with us here today. Now, for those of you listening at home and don't know where to find Rebecca, can you tell us about your links and where to find you online?
Sure. Online, it's RebeccaRayDesigns.com. And if you Google us, you will undoubtedly find us. We have a wonderful blog that is, if you scroll down to the front page, there's a link to the blog. We're very active on Facebook under the same handle. And we're very active on Instagram, where I think we're Rebecca Ray Designs USA. With some dashes underneath. So, but we're pretty easy to find and come join our community. It's lots of fun. And we have recipes that we share. In fact, my Christmas blog is up right now with the Christmas punch that I like to serve. And it's a really easy recipe and it never fails. So we're going to send sneak pictures of the house and the horses and the dogs and stuff out all throughout the season. So you might enjoy seeing those.
Yeah, that's perfect. I love seeing, you know, following you on social media. So I'm sure everyone else will put your links in the show notes and everyone can go find you. But thank you so much for chatting with us today and, you know, hope you have a wonderful holiday season.
Well, you ladies as well. And don't forget to go check to see if your animals are talking at midnight on Christmas Eve.
I will for sure. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thanks, Rebecca. It's not easy being a cowgirl, but a little magic helps. No matter if you're a horse trainer, photographer, mother, secretary, or athlete, Cowgirl Magic Hand Cream is here to add a hint of the lush life to any active, hardworking lifestyle. The new Cowgirl Magic Ultra Hydrating Cream is luxurious, rejuvenating, and clean, complemented by a light, soothing fragrance. Formulated with a blend of coconut, apricot, avocado, sesame, and olive oil, this age-defying formula works hard to deeply hydrate, restore, and fight the appearance of wrinkles as it absorbs quickly with no residue or greasy feel.
From the makers of Cowboy Magic, Straight Arrow is proud to present this age-defying moisturizer, new to Cowboy Magic's line of products, adding a cowgirl's touch.
Today, we are chatting with Audra Agnone, the equine placement coordinator at Happy Trails Animal Sanctuary in Ravenna, Ohio. Hi, Audra.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being here with us today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So today's adoptable horse of the month is Nomad. So can you tell us a little bit about this sweet gelding?
Yeah, so Nomad is a 15-year-old, 13.3 hand grade pony. He has a really special story that we are super happy to be a part of, but he's kind of ready to transition to a new home. He is rideable and he does extremely well. We actually originally came across him in a corner stall at the Sugar Creek Auction, and he nickered to us and seemed like a big project. He was blind, a little bit underweight. We were a little skeptical. We ended up obviously winning the auction and bringing him home. We just couldn't let him go. He is extremely well adapted to his blindness. He should make a really fun pony to put around the backyard or maybe some trails on.
Audra, I just loved hearing about this because I have a friend in real life. I also follow her on Instagram, but I know her in real life and here in Illinois, and she has a blind mare and she does some pretty amazing things. And there's an account I follow on Instagram too for this blind Appaloosa, and this horse's name is Endo the Blind, and he does amazing things like trail courses, driving. I've seen him, they do lessons, I think, with little kids and that. So I was unaware until my friend and then following this account that blind horses still have so much to give.
Yeah, I mean, they really do. He's extremely playful on the ground. And it's such a cool story because he really does need a home where he isn't, where the home doesn't allow his blindness to bring him down. And it sounds like that's exactly what your friend and Endo, what they do with their horses. It's really awesome.
So would you recommend, I honestly don't know a lot about blind horses. I'm just mildly aware, but would you recommend that he have another companion to help him know where boundaries are, like for, you know, a pasture or a paddock or something like that?
Generally, I would, but I will say Nomad does extremely well out in his herd, but he also is the kind of horse that I think would do well alone also. So he could go either way. And I think that benefits him a lot. He doesn't really seem to mind. He doesn't want to be any part of any drama that any of the other horses have. So I think it could go either way with him. I really think he would be good with companions or he would do well alone.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Does he, I'm trying to picture what he looks like. Can you tell us a little bit about his coat color and mane and tail? And
yeah. Kind of? So he's a bay gelding. He has an adorable little head tilt. That's kind of one thing that drew us in. It's so cute because it's like a curious head tilt, but we believe that the head tilt came from the injury that caused his blindness. We don't have background information on it, but our vet believes that he had a significant head injury, which caused the blindness and has also caused the slight head tilt. He has, a black mane and tail and really actually a very good conformation for a pony. So he just an overall really cute pony.
Yeah, he looks really adorable. Now, can you tell us, for the people who would like to see Nomad and apply to adopt him, where they can do that?
Yes. So our website is happytrailsfarm.org. And we have a very simple adoption application process where we just prefer you to fill out the application. And then we do a lot of our matchmaking through conversation. So we generally will give you a call and kind of work out details and make sure that he's a good fit for your home. And then from there, we can have you schedule a visit and bring you on out to meet him.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today and sharing a little bit about Nomad. And I hope he really finds a wonderful home and someone who's going to love him for his blindness and embrace, you know, everything he has to offer.
Yes. Thank you for having us. And thank you for the opportunity to give him a chance to shine.
Thanks so much. Bye, thanks, Audra.
Bye.
You can listen to all of our past episodes at horseillustrated.com/podcast. And for a special subscription discount just for podcast listeners on Horse Illustrated or Young Rider magazines, visit horseillustrated.com/barnbanter. Thanks for listening. See you next time.